Alrighty. I see you moving your hips. That's good. After all, it's Brazilian music directly out of Canada. Directly out of Canada. This is the Samba Squad, and this is a percussion number titled Batuque. And this is from their album, their 2006 album, Bateria, which means drumming. I like it when music comes from unexpected places, but has that authenticity to it, you know? It's a universal language after all. So I present you today the Samba Squad with Batuque. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, waiting to hear what you consider very important issues that you would like to free your mind of and put it on us. Let's hear what's on your mind. You get rid of it, we take it on, and we start talking about it at 888-874-4888. Henry from Chicago. What's going on in Chicago, Henry?
Hey, Eutrice, how's it going?
Okay.
All right. We're hanging in there, just like the rest of the country and the world. Want to wish everybody and the PRN and Lead Stories listener audience a safe and prosperous weekend.
Thank
I
you.
want I want you to let me stretch out a little bit, and this is for your mind because I want to get into the topic here in Chicago of violence. And over the last couple of weeks, a lot of children have been caught up in this violence, which is very concerning to me and many of the people here in Chicago and the community. Now, people have always gave these suggestions on how we stop the violence in Chicago. How do we stop this black-on-black murder that is going on in Chicago? And, Neely Fuller has a excellent quote where he says, "If you don't understand racism, white supremacy, and how it works, everything else will confuse you." And I say that because when people make these suggestions on how we stop the violence in Chicago, well, it's the responsibility of the police. No, the community has to do it. We need to send troops here to Chicago, or we need to get the guns off the streets, or we need to get the drugs off the streets. And people just don't understand that there is no cookie cutter solution for this violence, because this violence has manifested over decades. And obviously it's getting worse because of the fact that one of the problems is that we're trying to solve one aspect of it, but we're ignoring the other. And most people don't even have a base that all of this violence is happening because of gang warfare. People don't understand that, well, in particular here in Chicago, gang warfare, has been going on for a while, but it has manifested to something that is, really bad right now. And, gangs have been in here in Chicago for, for decades, but, originally it was all about turf and it didn't involve a lot of guns. But when drugs started to get into the situation, that's when you started to get the violence started to ramp up. And not in particularly, say, when cocaine and even heroin got onto the scene, because obviously cocaine didn't affect as much of the black community because of the fact that it was a hello? Maybe I'm
Doesn't
telling too
like
much
me
truth.
either. So, okay, we even. So we even. We back on track now. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So, where did you lose me at? Because I know I was talking for a while.
You're talking about the emergence of violence and why it's now a dominant feature in Chicago. And you started giving us a little history of the high points of how it evolved in recent years.
Okay. So, Like I said, gangs have been around in Chicago for decades, but originally when gangs started, it was about turf, and then when drugs started to come in, it was it became more serious after that, and not in when cocaine came in, because cocaine was more of a rich person's drug, and even heroin, because I know heroin had devastated, you know, Harlem and New York community, but it didn't really do much for Chicago. It was when the crack cocaine epidemic happened where it kind of turned the gang violence into something, you know, more devastating. And, it has happened in all other cities in America as well. But when crack started to hit, that's when gang violence just started to get out of control. Because actually in the 90s, 900 people per year were getting shot, compared to the numbers where it's about 700. But what the problem is now is that more innocent people are getting shot compared to the 900 that has been happening in the 90s. Were more targeted victims and people who were actually in the game. So going to now, the problem is that when the feds who came to Chicago in the 90s, just like they're doing now, when they arrested all of the leaders, what happened was they left the drugs, the guns, and the foot soldiers back here in Chicago. So now there's no leadership. You have these different fractions that are coming up saying, well, this is my territory, or this is my territory. So now my neighborhood, which only had two gangs, now have 10 gangs. And they're all fighting over some sort of agenda that they have. And also, too, the drug economy, which, you know, we accepted, and it's probably our fault why the gang violence has spearheaded so bad, you know, we accepted that underground economy, but now that is dried up. And so basically you have, you know, the people who are on the streets now, some of them range from 6 years old to 30 years old, who are on the streets, you know, trying to, you know, obtain something that is not even there anymore. And this week you had a very popular rapper, his stage name was FBG Duck, who was, you know, into a lot of gang activity here. And he was unfortunately and tragically killed this week in his Gold Coast area. Now, for people who live in Chicago, the Gold Coast area is where mostly people who are rich live. So now going into what is the solutions? How do we stop this? Well, you know, a lot of people kind of put it on the community, which, yes, we have a responsibility for it as well. But how do we stop this as a community? Do we just tell, you know, the people, put down the guns and put down, you know, whatever you're beefing about away? You know, because most of these young people have severely traumatized lives that, you know, they're not going to listen to most of us. And then if we put it on the police, all they're going to do is just shoot them down or put them in jail, which is no solution at all as well. But there needs to be some kind of common ground where, you know, we both have to work together to put, you know, to at least have a short-term goal of keeping the rest of our community, and especially our children, safe. So,
well,
did
yes,
you want to say something,
Chief? It's long gone the time that we needed the community to heal itself. Now we're looking for answers from outside, and it comes with a whole bunch of attachments.
Mm-hmm.
The first attachment is you'll have to tolerate the conditions under which you get help, and that means you losing some of your rights. You are inviting a veritable police state into your community. There are all kinds of fallouts from moving this way. I could understand the dilemma, I certainly do, that people have, because these are the kinds of maladies that bring everybody down. And people seem not to care because, in fact, they don't care.
And the malignancy
comes from disaffected elements within our communities.
Yes, and you treat what you're just saying hits the nail on the head, because people from the outside think that this might be best for us. So when people throw money at the problem, you know, and don't get me wrong, economics can be part of the solution, but it is not the entire solution. And then when we talk about education, yes, education plays a part, but it is not the entire solution. All of these elements need to go together. It needs to synchronize together to what the community really needs. Now, the economics can play a huge part in it, but if you just keep throwing money at it, you're not going to get anything done. And yes, the education system needs to be, you know, fixed, and that is part of our problem as well, because most of these people who are in the streets have no identity, and they have no identity because they have not been properly educated to who they are and what they're supposed to be living for. And so that also needs to be, that basically needs to be a long-term goal. And the short-term goal.
Let us be honest.
Mm-hmm.
In large measure, the community itself abrogated responsibility for the deterioration within it. And they said, well, that's those people's fault. They're the ones causing the problem. Well, objectively,
mm-hmm.
if you're living day by day in a condition of abject poverty, you cannot move because you can't get a job. You can't get a job, you have no education, you have no experience. And the cycle is repetitive. But it is the perfect solution, because what the larger society is able to do is to say, see, they can't control themselves. And so we have to move in. And this is not a problem solved with group therapy and coffee and cookies. We have to come in and take hard measures, harsh measures, to solve this problem. You may not like what we do, but this is the only way to go. We don't have enough of a mass within the community itself that says, we can't allow that. Bad as the situation is, we have to find another way. But I am not aware of most communities that are assailed by these problems having their own ideas of how to solve their own problems. They too have walked away.
Yes.
When you they've weaponized these children by neglecting to take control of their own households.
Mm-hmm.
You have guns. And you have the economy. You know, it is not publicly said, but there is a vigorous economy in many communities. Unfortunately, they're related to drug sales, weapons mm-hmm. sales, and, you know, tyranny, essentially.
They've taken over the land mass.
Yes. They rule mm-hmm. it. The cops, you know, recede, they disappear, and they're there only to gain access to victims to take them out to the hospital or to, you know, conduct investigations after their murders and so forth. But there's a this is my theory. The chaos is not really chaos. It is working absolutely precisely for people who are predators in these communities. Drug sales are up. As poor as these communities are, they're making a lot of money from drug sales. With drugs goes guns. So they're making a lot of money from gun sales. And They're making a lot of money from the ancillary crimes that people tend to commit. Extortion, threats, break-ins, these kinds of crimes. So it's a system that feeds on itself. But just the same, because there is so much capital, there's so much money associated even with this miserable way of life. There's a lot of money in it. So people weigh it and say, well, you know, I have to watch myself, but I could do well.
Exactly. And Yatrice, one last thing, because you hit on a good point, and this is the mistake that our community made by accepting this underground economy in our community. The problem was we did not own this economy. We marginally benefited from him, like you said, you know, the payoffs and everything like that. But once they take away this economy, we're back to square one, and we got more violence than we have ever seen.
Yes, it's going to go that way because it's reached a point where it's not easily fixable. You know, it's gone beyond point where you can't you're not even making sense to the people you're trying to help because they've become increasingly one-dimensional. That's how life works. I'm not concerned about a good job. I'm not concerned about a good quality of life. I'm not concerned about giving to this community. Those things have no part in this equation of my life. In my life, it's strictly, what do I get what I want? I get what I want. However, I get it. I am the master of my own fate. If I get killed, that goes with the territory.
And the other half of the community is talking about survival.
Reversal of values.
Yes, and the other half of the community is talking about just surviving.
I'm sorry?
I'm saying what you were talking about, the group who was just talking about, I'm going to get mine. You got the other half who's just talking about surviving. That's all they want to do.
And they all are in the same, they're sharing the same land mass.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way to get away from each other. Not completely.
Yes.
It is something very deep that is going on, and we have to dig as deep as the situation is in order to understand it. But in the end, it's capitalism. Everybody is after their piece of the pie. Everybody needs to make that dollar. Mm-hmm. However they make it, they don't care.
Exactly.
They're going to make it. They're also losing it, too, you know.
Yes.
You make the money, and 10 minutes later, you're back to square one. But that, too, is the accepted ritual and rhythm of life in these communities that are desperate. They're on the edge of desperation. We have the resources, I think, in our own communities to direct us as to where to go. And to look beyond the issue of, well, it's about drugs, it's about crime, it's about murder. Yes, but these are natural outgrowths of the way people are living. You take the mafia, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible crimes being committed. But I would dare say that the difference here is that they're holding to ancient values about family and respect and honor. But essentially, they're still criminals.
Committing
major crimes. So we see that it is not unique. The criminal element is not unique in the African American or Latino communities. It is that we don't control our own destiny. We don't have rules. Rules are very important, even among criminals.
Oh, yes, indeed.
You have to have rules that are punishable, severely punished, when people break the rules. In Brooklyn, you know, the news would say such and such a person was found dead under a bridge. The reaction uniformly is, well, he must have done something. That's the explanation you get. He must have done something, meaning he must have broken some kind of rule. But he understood that this was, you know, a likely consequence of it. So there's a lot of stuff we need to understand and separate. And we should always remember, we don't have a handle on this. We don't know this world as well as we ought to.
And so that is my point.
We could hardly be the ones to fix it. But we must learn it. And we must try to fix it just the same, because we live here. Thanks for getting us started today.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Henry. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
How are you, Eutrice? I hope all is well. I enjoyed your show with Brother Horde earlier this week. I mean, it's always an honor to have that Brother Horde to give forward his special knowledge and wisdom.
He's coming back next week. We just have to nail down the day.
Beautiful. I can't wait. Listen, what I'm basically calling about is our young people and them going back to school. I'm saying to all parents that are out there, if they can, please don't send your kids back to school till at least February. By that time, we should really have an idea on what's going on in these schools in regards to this coronavirus. I think if you send your kids back to school before that, and you have family members in your home, you are really putting them in jeopardy. And we have to be really on top of this, because the way that this pandemic has been handled has shown nothing but gross negligence on the part of government. And, you know, we have to protect our kids and ourselves first. And
but here's the thing. In the meantime, there is something called the law, which we have little control over. When you say don't send your kids back to school, you do understand that immediately you're breaking the law, quote unquote.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. In certain states, you do have a right to homeschool your children. There are,
yes, but there's a process. You don't just have a right to homeschool your children. You have to go through a process of approval to have the right to homeschool your children.
Not in every state. In some states, you're correct, Eutrice, but not in every state. But it is your obligation as a parent to do what you have to do to protect your child. And
yes,
these are not safe environments. So you're saying to me that you would jeopardize your child and your family's life over a law that could be challenged? No, you don't do that.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying clearly, people should have been following this event of the virus and the damage it is causing in our communities, which means you prepare. You prepare. You don't just make the decision at the last minute and say, well, I'm taking my child out of school. I'm not convinced that the school is a safe environment. You don't come to that conclusion at the last minute. While you are observing what is happening, you are also preparing mentally that there may be a time very soon that you will ultimately have to take your child out of school and do the best to educate that child at home. However, if you are preparing, this is what I'm saying, this didn't just show up yesterday. you had enough time to gauge what was going on and therefore plan for an alternative. The other part of
well,
it
is... Well, unfortunately, if you take your
child out of school, you have another problem. If you are the wage earner in your home, it means that you have to now assume full-time responsibility for the child, for childcare. These are things you have to prepare for because they're just as injurious to the child as the viruses. When there's no smooth preparation, so you don't jeopardize a child's educational future and you don't incur unnecessary, difficulties in your own household. This is one of the things that Black folks need to do. You watch the way things are going, and you see the possibility, a very real possibility, that you will have to make alternative arrangements for your child. What are those alternative arrangements? But we wait until the last minute to decide what to do, and it becomes a calamity.
Yeah, but unfortunately, Eutrice, people don't operate like that. And
well, they're
going
to have to start.
Yeah, but I understand
point,
that.
You're the parent.
But you have
you
to
are
start
the parent,
there.
All right? You're the parent. You are responsible for the total care of this child.
Yeah,
so you have
saying,
to have some kind of a plan that says, okay, if it looks like things aren't going right, I inevitably will have to take my child out of school. Now comes the serious planning. Where will that child go? Who will take care of that child's educational future?
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is we have to look at these things, and I agree with you, prepare for these things, but in the process, you have to take into consideration the safety of your family and those that surround you. But lastly, I also like to say, what this government is doing in regards to this pandemic with the unemployment and the other things that are going on with the people not being able to get help with their rent and things of that nature is an atrocity. And I hope that people recognize what's being done to them by these politicians and that they make them pay for it, because it's inexcusable for you as a politician to say to a citizen in this country that we're not going to give you something because we think that it will prevent you from going back to work where there is no work for them to go back to because of the way that they've handled this pandemic. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And the sad thing is, there's so many people that are suffering that the media isn't even telling us about. I mean, if you look at New York City, it's about to be within the next 4 to 5 months a place that we may not even recognize economically or culturally like we've never seen before. The homelessness, to just show you how quickly it's going, are now being placed in hotels in some of the most richest neighborhoods in New York. And they're basically showing the people what's about to happen. All you have to do is look at the New York Post. The homeless are just running amok on Broadway in Amsterdam on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And these are people that pay $4,000 and $5,000 a month for rent in old homes and condominiums and things of that nature. And that's about to become the norm that nobody wants to deal
with.
It's about
degree. To become the norm, but you know what happens in crisis situations. This is where people make a lot of money. And for them, that's all it is. There's no emotional involvement. This is where they make a lot of money.
Yeah, but their even neighbors in good times, are suffering.
They wouldn't make this much money.
But you treat their neighbors in the community is going to be suffering. Who cares that maybe 10 people may make money when your whole community and your whole neighborhood is going to be destroyed? That's insanity. But
nobody raised the issue, the very issue you're raising. It's not raised in normal times. I've done programs, as you know,
because
on
it's controlled.
The decimation of Harlem. I've done it.
Yeah, but you treat it's controlled. It's not controlled now. That's the difference. There's no control of it because of what's been done to the community by the politicians. Now you're going to have a real pandemic on your head that you ain't ready to deal with. That's what's so crazy. Yeah, a few people going to get rich, but the community is going to suffer.
Because
it's gonna be
the community has washed its hands of the responsibility for the integrity of the community.
You think so? You really
Absolutely.
Think so?
How do you explain? Know. How do you explain rampant gentrification going on in Harlem?
Yeah, but no, you're wrong, you trees. Rapid gentrification in Harlem. Let me finish. I live in Harlem. Rapid gentrification in Harlem has been over for the last 2 years. And I'll tell you why quickly. Because of New York City public housing. White folks ain't coming into the community in the manner in which they was because of New York City public housing. And they don't want to live around that type of despair. So it slowed it down a little bit. And now with the pandemic, big businesses are not able to develop and grow on the matter that it is. So gentrification in Harlem is basically at a standstill. And the reason why
but
I say
beyond,
that is because I live in Harlem
this
and I travel Harlem
explaining.
And I know a lot of real estate people.
This is what I have been talking about. It is beyond gentrification where you replace one population with another population. It is about land ownership, taking the land. Once you have the land, you can do anything you want with it. And although Harlem is, I should say, it used to be majority black, the ownership of the land did not belong to them.
I agree with you.
All right.
It's still minority, Utrice, it's still minority black, but it's not minority black owned. And as far as black businesses go, there's less than what it was 5 years ago. I agree with you totally on that, but they just haven't been able to totally displace black people the way that they thought they was. And the reason is
easy.
Because
that's
of the project.
That's easily done. That's the easiest part of this whole thing. You just make it unaffordable. And they do
that. They haven't been able to do it yet.
Yeah.
They haven't been able
you
to do it yet
it
because
unaffordable.
Of the project.
Whereas your little piece of an apartment that you had, you could pay $250 a month. That same apartment is now $1,200 a month.
Not all of them. There's still some where, because of, I guess, rent control or rent stabilization, they've been able to maintain the poverty level and the affordability of those houses. And that basically happens in the projects with some buildings.
Are some of the easiest things to dismantle. Because the connections that are needed, they have the connections needed to get these things done. That's not a problem. The problem is the official transfer of land. And that dictates everything. Never mind about, you used to have black people, now you have white people. That's not the issue. The issue is whether you had black people or white people, they control nothing. because that is not the primary focus of people who target areas like this. They are after the land. And I don't know how else to say it. You own the land, you own everything.
Hey, Eutrice.
Thanks for calling in. Thanks for contributing so meaningfully today. Thank you. Randolph from Montreal, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice.
Hello.
You're taking away a lot of my questions, but I don't know. Well, the thing is, I'm thinking that so much of the history of the United States is based on fear and violence. From the beginning of its establishment, violence was used to gain control of the country. And what happens, in a situation like that is people grow up thinking that that's normal, that whatever you want to succeed at, you have to use violence and fear, and you're going to be rewarded enormously. But it doesn't have to be like that. Other countries have feelings for their population. In other words, they allocate vast resources for the well-being of their country. And so violence is less likely to occur because if children are receiving an allowance from the state or from the society until they're 18, there is no necessity to go stealing and getting into drugs and having to sell your soul to succeed. Two countries I've been thinking of, Russia and China. Russia, from the 1990s, lifted themselves out from massive depression and chaos and turned it into a more moral and prosperous country. As a matter of fact, I was deeply impressed when they were celebrating their defeat of and win over belligerents. And the defense minister came out in his car to review a massive number of troops. He is the highest ranking officer of the military. And suddenly the car slowed down to a stop. He took off his hat and made the sign of the cross and then put back his hat on and reviewed the troops. To me, this is really morally a much more moral standing for the troops. He's telling the troops, we have a standard. We believe in a morality of decency amongst people. And China, for the last 30 years, it has lifted 800 million people out of poverty and provided an economy that is the envy of the world. I mean, to go to China, you think you're in a Western country with the infrastructure, with the buildings. So war doesn't have to be the answer. Fear doesn't have to be the answer.
You need to be reminded of something very important. The examples that you have offered today are classic propaganda. The Chinese use it, the Russians use it, and most dictatorial governments use it to keep people in line and to convey false impressions to those overseas who are looking at the propaganda. I've been to Russia. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Russia, this is now at the beginning of the Glasnost era, there were people sleeping in the park and sharing, as many as four families sharing the same apartment.
What year was that?
Oh, I can't remember the exact year.
Was it just... The 90s or 80s?
No, it's 80s, in the 80s.
Yeah. Okay.
But four families had to share one apartment, and it was not a large apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were not in the apartment, they were sleeping in the park.
Yeah.
This was considered an upgrade. And what we're told outside of Russia is, you know, the great strides being made.
Right.
I was outside in the park one day, and I saw this mass of people running in my direction, running toward me. And I ducked behind a tree.
Oh,
I didn't
God.
Know what was going on. You know what was going on? They
no.
got wind that somebody had cucumbers for sale. And that created a veritable stampede.
Right.
So don't pay attention to the propaganda.
It has very little relevance to what is going on. This is after the 90s. This is after the fall of the Soviet Union. Imagine, half the country left the Soviet Union in one day. Imagine, and
yes,
half
but
the states of the
I'm
United
saying
States.
There, as in my view, there is no perfect answer yet to the multiplicity of problems. People still are not eating well. They're very unhealthy. They're not getting enough food. They're overworked and underpaid. They're living in squalid conditions.
Well, there's sanctions. There's sanctions.
Yeah, we know that. There have been sanctions for centuries.
Sanctions actually ended up leading to the war in Japan, which caused
the enormous thing you're talking about
yesterday.
Temporary history that we are experiencing day to day now. Supposedly, the benefit they have is the history that they just came out of to teach them not to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a dedication to the thing is, in this change that they want to make, or at least they say they want to make,
sure.
The number one task is working on people's minds. Convincing them that the suffering that they're going through now is not really suffering. It is about contributing to a better life. They're lying. You can't tell me that four families, let's say an average of four, two parents and two children, that's 16 people living in a little 2x4 kind of apartment. That's unacceptable.
But that has changed from the 1990s.
No,
that
it
has
hasn't changed.
Changed
substantially.
Look at the soccer. What they did for the people from the world created. They spent, I don't know how many billions they spent for the soccer FIR. And they brought people from the world.
That enjoy great coverage, and they use these things to maximum advantage. Look at the soccer.
He brought
all
people
of us
in free to show them what the country looked like. But I'm not trying to say that Russia is the only ideal in the world. All I'm saying is the way that a nation utilizes its wealth is misused in the United States. It doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to spend
in China today. Today in China, you just talked about a high-level military official arriving in his car, a limousine.
Sure. Right.
These things are also meant to convey the progress China has made. You go into the rural areas and into the mountains of China.
Right.
That does not exist. The people are living hand to mouth. They have jobs. They are stuck. China has said, you're a farmer, and forever and a day you will be a farmer. Your children will be farmers. Their children will be farmers.
They fed an entire nation. These people you're saying that are poor, they have a science of agriculture. They were feeding
the
entire country.
That's my problem. Never mind the advances. They're not reaping the rewards commensurate with the advances they have helped to enact. There are people in China who don't have enough to eat, including the farmers producing the food.
Well, what about the medicine in the United States? Is that the best medicine in the world?
But you see, you're drawing parallels.
With all the technology,
let's stick to one thing. The United States, we know it's riddled with contradictions.
True.
And the fallout is that it always comes to the poorest people to bear the heaviest burden. But that is what I'm trying to tell you, is that that is not just a capitalist reality. That is worldwide. So I don't pay attention when people talk about communism and capitalism. They need to see it on the ground, how it manifests itself and the havoc it still creates in people's lives that the governments have not eradicated.
But they certainly brought out 800 million people. That is a lot of people.
It's a lot of people, but it
could
have been more.
And 30 years, they didn't fight all these wars. They didn't go around and kill.
China does this game. They profess communism, but they don't practice it. China right now is, I would say, for all intents and purposes, a capitalist country.
Right.
It has taken on many of the trappings of capitalism.
And they'll refine it to make it more humane.
Yes, but you can't make capitalism humane.
Majority of the
people. By definition, it means that the people who are wealthy and rich, they are in the top layer.
Sure.
The people who are producing the wealth.
Right.
Are way down on the bottom. That's the basic formula of capitalism. And you don't move from the bottom to the top. Not easily. It takes generations for that to happen.
Eutrice, listen. One Chinese student is four grades ahead of
the wrong
student
thing.
In the United States.
He's
in
four
other words,
grades. Let's say I agree. Let's say I agree he's four grades ahead. He's hungry every day. That's the problem.
What
he's
is the problem?
He's not supposed to be hungry every day.
Ugly?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I missed.
You have widespread hunger in China. Despite what they say.
They've been feeding their people for forever.
Yes.
No matter what the population.
But not enough. But not enough.
Well, they can import it, for heaven's sakes. They don't have
they
to spend it on
arms.
They can't
import anything because
it
would contradict publicly. It will contradict the propaganda that they have been producing all these years.
Well,
that they are self-sufficient, and they can feed themselves.
The United States is not angelic in the propaganda field. They have Radio America, for heaven's sakes, it's going on for I don't know how many years. It's there.
You know what Radio America is, don't you?
It's propaganda.
Do you not know?
Well, it's the way the Americans
propaganda.
Look at themselves.
Radio America, Voice of America,
Voice of America,
anything yeah. like that, you can guarantee it is, it exists to tell their distorted story. You don't get away from it no matter where you are in the world, no matter what form of government they say they practice, whether it's communism or capitalism. You have to take the position from the word go, you're being propagandized.
But the Chinese have something to show for their efforts. The United States is showing disintegration.
But when has
poverty.
It not? It started that way.
And war.
It started on the wrong... This is what Gerald Horn was talking about.
Right.
Since the 16th century.
Right.
He explained the contradictions there.
Mm-hmm.
It was designed as a state where some would be ridiculously wealthy and others right. would do their bidding and have nothing.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
So if we want to believe now that it's a democracy and that all is well and we all treat it equally, you know, you're kidding yourself. It is the same premise in China as it is in the United States. I saw in Russia, I never saw so many limousines in my life. I never expected to see that. People dining in fine restaurants and having a ball. That didn't look anywhere close to the idea that the government is for the people and serving the people. Nothing like that. It didn't come close. And four families sharing an apartment. When it's not your turn to be there, you have to sleep in the park. This is what I'm telling you. So let's not fall for the propaganda. Let's maintain a sense of, I'll see it, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, I hate to tell you, but we've reached the end of our program. But Randolph, I thank you so much for calling in.
You're
and
welcome.
Raising
Thank you for being
these
decent.
Questions and observations and contributing so meaningfully to our discussion today. I thank
Thank
everybody
you.
For doing that.
Bless you.
And that's the reason we have Free Your Mind Friday. You own this time. This is your time to talk about things that are of great importance to you. And by instruction, we are learning, all of us. When we have this rapport back and forth, we don't have to agree at all. But if we take the time to listen and we examine the contradictions that we live with every day, some of which we have adapted to so well, we believe in an America that was manufactured for us. But we should also examine, you know, lift the tablecloth a little bit and see what's under there. Thanks so much. It's the weekend. Surround yourselves with people who are supportive and who bring good things to your life. And certainly plan on living through the weekend so that we can reconnect on Monday. Thanks again. Bye-bye.